Happy Mother's Day, all you mothers. My mother, anybody who considers themselves to have been a mother figure, even if you never actually bore children yourself, but you took over in that capacity. Let's honor them as well. And that can include even some the occasional dad who was both mother and father to a child somewhere. So, again, happy Mother's Day. And that includes a lot of people. Hope you are appropriately honored wherever you are. I know it's a tough toss of the dice for folks in the southern part of the Mississippi Valley as the waters continue to rise. They won't crest yet for hours, and it looks like a serious threat to property and to life and to livelihoods and farms that are underwater right now. And it's going to get a lot worse before it gets better. And gosh, our thoughts are with you. It can't be easy to be you. And yet, I also think we should highlight the fact that according to some predictions, this will be the second to last or third to last Saturday night, Sunday morning that we'll have to spend together on the planet as we know it. So maybe that takes the edge off the flooding concerns. This morning as we head into May 8th, which would be the race for the cure too, if you're going to participate in your town near you, remember that in the morning. Then we have the 14th coming up, and then the 21st, and the 21st is supposed to be the end of the world as we know it. So we're counting it down, and you'll be hearing it live. It'll be happening as we speak on this show, theoretically, starting at 6 p.m. on the Pacific time zone. Supposedly on May 21st, we'll begin to feel the earthquakes that will rumble forward and the death and destruction that will have been brought about with the second coming. So book that for a show we have, and we'll tell you more about it when we get closer to May 21st. Tonight, first hour guest is a returning guest from a couple of weeks ago. For just a few minutes here, we'll talk with Fred Burton. We know Fred Burton. He's an expert on counterterrorism. He was the author of the book Ghost Confessions of a Counterterrorism Agent. He played a big hand in the arrest of Ramzi Youssef. He was on talking about his most recent book, Chasing Shadows: A Special Agent's Lifelong Hunt to Bring a Cold War Assassin to Justice. It's a great book. And it's really very well written, very well told story, which has ramifications for what we're talking about tonight, bringing somebody to justice, an assassin like Osama bin Laden. And I wanted to ask Fred Burton, with his expertise as the vice president of counterterrorism and corporate security for Stratfor, or for his work in public service, founding one of the first counterterrorism agencies in the United States. I want to ask him about where we are going forward with the death of Osama bin Laden. And so he's going to take my questions. We might even get in one or two of yours. But what does this mean? And where, as he understands counterterrorism, what should we be prepared for? You may have heard about some of the things that have been recovered from the disk drives or the computers in the compound where Osama bin Laden was killed. What was on those hard drives that we have to be prepared for, and how can we be? We'll ask Fred Burton about that coming up next on Coast to Coast. And then coming up next hour, also relevant to today. You've heard the gas prices are going down. The oil bubble burst, at least temporarily, or profit taking took place or whatever. But suddenly now oil is below $100 a barrel again. The president has made renewable energy the focus of his weekly audio address for 3 weeks in a row. And so we'll talk with the Stanford University professor Mark Jacobson about 100% renewable energy, how it can happen on this planet, sources of energy like wind, water, sunlight that would be 100% renewable, completely petroleum free. It's easier than you think, and its time may have come. It would be a very interesting day as an oil trader, to trading oil futures, if we went to 100% renewable energy? Who stands to gain? Who stands to lose? How could it happen? And who would stop it? We'll get to that coming up next hour on Coast to Coast with the little open lines in between. On Coast to Coast AM, this is Ian Punnett. I just heard a commercial there for Sea Crane, and I want to give a completely unsolicited, uncompensated testimonial on something real quickly, then we'll get to Fred Burton. This is that time of year when you should have a pocket radio of some sort that gets a weather band. There are so many commercials that I live in sort of a tornado alley, and there are so many commercials on TV right now from the local TV stations reminding people to have that. And I heard recently there was a shortage of them, you know, like you couldn't get them at like Radio Shack or whatever, because we're heading into this big tornado season. I thought, go to Sea Crane, you crazy people. They'll be there in like 24 hours. So get a good pocket radio with a weather band. You got to keep track of these, something with an alert that'll wake you up. Because you think about all those tornadoes that happened in the middle of the night recently in the South and how people have been recovering from them. If it hadn't been for that simple technology, there would have been a lot more people killed. And I know that there's still tremendous loss of life, but your best bet is an early warning system. If you don't have that, get that. That way, when you go to bed at night, you know that if a tornado develops, you know, if you nod off in the middle of this show, and a tornado develops in your neighborhood, it'll automatically go off and wake you up. And it really could make the difference between life and death. Oh, and they also have this cool thing about a super Wi-Fi antenna that you put in. If you're trying to gobble up some free Wi-Fi, particularly handy, you know. Anyway, so let's bring in Fred Burton back again. We just had him on a little while ago, but he was so great. The new book is so much fun, too, Chasing Shadows: A Special Agent's Lifelong Hunt to Bring a Cold War Assassin to Justice. I hadn't finished it then. I have now. I won't ruin it, but it's just great. What a fun story. And thank you, Fred Burton, for taking the time to write it. And welcome back to Coast to Coast.
Thank you for having me, Ian.
Okay. So I thought of you yesterday. We're hearing more and more about what we're learning about what's inside of these disk drives that have been recovered from Osama bin Laden's compound. Some scary stuff, some stuff that requires counterterrorism. And since you, as a counterterrorism agent, are kind of one of the founding fathers of counterterrorism in this country, I wanted to ask you about it. For example, the February 2010 notes in Osama bin Laden's personal effects, which indicate that they were looking as early as February of 2010 into doing a massive coordinated attack on the trains in the United States, maybe on Christmas Day, maybe New Year's Day, maybe a 9/11 anniversary, something where on these trains all over the United States are going to be blowing stuff up simultaneously. We've seen them do that in other parts of the world. What, as a counterterrorism agent, do you hear in both the report of that and the fact that the government released that information as having been in his notes?
One of the challenging issues when you're involved with threat information is the decision to disseminate. And when you decide to go public with that kind of threat, you pretty much are dealing with a situation where you recognize that you have no handle on the problem. And that's the issue with public transportation. And as you look at that threat, there is no doubt that there are certain areas that are much more vulnerable. For example, the D.C. subway system, the New York subway, the Amtrak corridor that runs between Washington, D.C. and as far north as Boston. It's impossible in reality to protect the mass transportation system. Therefore, you have to go public and alert. And the hope is, Ian, when you do that, is you bring in millions of other eyes that will be alert for suspicious packages, for the unattended suitcase that's sitting at a subway stop, for example, the Pentagon subway stop and the D.C. subway system. So, in essence, you're leveraging the American public to help you.
Okay. And we know that that's been very successful in the past, because of what we know, if Americans are armed with information on what to look out for, we can do all sorts of things. And it was average people sitting in planes that saw, you know, the first guy tried to light his shoes on fire and the second guy trying to light his underwear on fire. And, you know, it's average Americans that brought down the plane on 9/11 over just outside of Pittsburgh. So once we know what to do, we can do a lot. But at the same time, this train system, it's so massive. My wife just got back from riding on trains, taking a train to Chicago. And she said, if she were a terrorist, this is what she would do. I mean, there's no security. You can bring on anything you want. There's, you know, no liquid restrictions, no anything. So how even could the average person, even armed with this information, effectively stop anything?
Well, what most people don't see in some of these heavily threatened corridors are undercover surveillance agents. There is technology such as facial recognition and other kinds of sophisticated electronic surveillance technology looking for behaviors, predominantly over a time and distance variable. And they're trying to look for pre-operational surveillance. There's a very specific attack cycle that terrorist organizations such as Al-Qaeda go forward with. And it begins with some of the basics, and that is taking pictures, taking video surveillance, looking at the entire package, such as inbound intelligence intercepts on the travel of personnel. So when you have this kind of granular intelligence, like we've recovered inside of Bin Laden's safe house, you're able to plug that into your massive intelligence that you already have underway to help you laser focus on other kinds of specific warnings and indicators.
Okay. I'll get off that for the moment just to ask, too. You know, you were involved in the capture of Ramzi Youssef as a part of the counterterrorism agency within the State Department. How is that organization, to your knowledge anyway, without giving any proprietary information, how could they have been involved in the killer capture of Osama bin Laden? Or how are they involved in what's going forward with the other remaining very potent threats from Al-Qaeda and the Taliban out there?
Well, your first concern is certainly in Pakistan with the protection of your U.S. diplomatic personnel. There's such a long history of terrorism inside of the country going back to the 79 embassy facility seizure where some of our Marines were killed with mob violence and a ransack of the embassy. So one of your biggest fears is what degree of protection do you have now from the Pakistanis? Will they help you protect your personnel and facilities? And the brilliance in this operation, Ian, really starts with the CIA, which has been much aligned over the years. And in many ways, though, their surveillance of the courier inside of Pakistan, and they're operating inside a country that's hostile to the CIA, pretty much very anti-American. And that's the brilliance in this operation, was the surveillance of the courier inside of Pakistan as he was delivering face-to-face messages to Osama bin Laden, and doing that without alerting the Pakistani intelligence service, the ISI. Of course, all the public outcry now is how could bin Laden have been living inside of Pakistan for close to 6 years and the ISI not knowing? Guys like me find that hard to believe. And I think as this shakes out, there's going to be a lot more evidence of the Pakistani intelligence service providing a safe haven and a logistical cover for Osama bin Laden.
You know, I saw only one story, one out of, and I shared your suspicions without your expertise, but I saw one story that made me think, okay, well, maybe that explains that. Maybe that explains why the people on the ground in that neighborhood were willing to accept not knowing who was living in that compound. And that is that the word had gotten out on the street around the this, you know, fortress mansion that Osama bin Laden was living in, that he was a drug dealer. And that I thought that was interesting, because it's like, okay, because if you really thought you had a drug kingpin in there with armed guys, you know, maybe you kick your ball over the fence and you don't get the ball back. That's okay. You know, maybe that might explain that.
Well, again, remember, our ability today to control the cyberspace, to look for intelligence nuggets, and you know, the phrase of bin Laden hiding in plain sight.
Right.
This was something that we looked at as a company. You know, as early as 2005, we long suspected that bin Laden was hiding in an urban environment, because an urban environment gives you the cover for action, meaning you have the neighborhood that you can leverage to help you hide. You've got kids on the streets. You've got animals that can, dogs that can bark if a special forces team comes in. You just can't infiltrate into the communities. Guys that look like you and me can't go into that area without right. people asking a heck of a lot of questions.
Unless we're flying one of those really cool, ultra-secret, quiet helicopters, which I loved hearing about. And it was it helped explain how they were able to land somebody right on top of that building without them knowing it until the last second. Again, we're talking with Fred Burton, who's with Stratfor, former special agent with the U.S. Diplomatic Security Service as a counterterrorism agent. All right, so back to the future. How are we going to decide? What's the criteria, do you think, for who's the next biggest threat after Osama bin Laden has been taken off the most wanted list at number one?
Well, I think we made the first step earlier today when we attempted to assassinate al-Awlaki of the head of al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula. And that's the important part to remember here, Ian, is that there are franchise and grassroots organization that far surpass the al-Qaeda that has come to be the poster child of terrorism today. And this, for example, AQAP is responsible for the Fort Hood shooting, the Christmas Day bomber, and this individual, al-Awlaki, who's very Western and trained and actually has family in Arizona, went to school in California, he knows our country. He knows where the vulnerabilities are, and we made an effort to try to assassinate him, but missed in Yemen. There's no doubt that there's going to be a manhunt for Dr. al-Zawahiri, who is bin Laden's notional number two, although there has been some intelligence that there was a rift between the two. So you're going to see all of these al-Qaeda leaders now hunkered down, wondering when SEAL Team 6 is going to be coming through their windows over the next 30 days or so.
It's surprising that, as you said, we said that they missed. Are we talking about Anwar al-Awlaki?
Correct.
They missed him, you said. And so after having just gotten Osama bin Laden, as hard as he was a target to get, it seems hard to believe that they got him. Maybe they should have sent in Navy, you know, SEAL Team 6. Those guys don't miss much.
No, they're literally, I must say that having worked with that specific organization over the years, most of the American public have, I think they've seen their capabilities now. But if you ever put yourself in harm's way, we would joke amongst ourselves, let's hope that this is the organization that comes to get you. As you look at this, though, again, remember, just like we grabbed Ramzi Yousef, and the courier led SEAL Team 6 to that safe house. This always, always boils down to human intelligence. You need a source, a person that you can watch to take you to your target. And that is extraordinarily difficult to get at times, especially in countries like Pakistan, where you have the host government that is assisting these organizations.
Yeah, at least at some level, if not at the top, and maybe at the top too, but, you know, especially in these countries where local politicians, local governors can effectively control a region just as well as any national leader can. And so you might even get a national one trying to help and a local one trying to hurt, and the local one wins. But it could go all the way to the top in Pakistan too, and we just don't know. Well, if you hang on for a question or two, that'd be great, Fred Burton. Otherwise, we'll go open lines. We'll give you the numbers next on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. So we'll go open lines here, but it looks like we got a lot of people with questions for Fred Burton all of a sudden. So want to honor that while we're honoring Mom with a little Ozzy Osbourne here. You know, nothing says Mother's Day like Ozzy. My mom always said, Mother's Day, wake me up. All I want is a handwritten poem, a handmade card, and some Ozzy. So I just did that. We've got a great show ahead on Coast to Coast. About a half hour from now, we'll talk about 100% renewable energy. The latest work that's going on right now in this country, in the world, on 100% renewable energy. On every possible level, to be completely petroleum free. What would that mean? We get a little taste now and again of, you know, what happens to our economy when oil prices start ticking upward. And we are reminded of just how much power is outside of our control to other countries, to other worldviews that could devastate our economy. Even forces within our own economy that would love nothing more than to see huge price spikes all the time that make gigantic profits every quarter. But what would happen if all energy was 100% renewable? And it could happen. And we'll tell you just how easily it could be happening and how you could be off the grid, too, coming up next hour on Coast to Coast. But first, some open lines and questions for Fred Burton, counterterrorism expert, on this auspicious occasion, just a week after the killer capture of Osama bin Laden on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. Remember, around the country, too, it's also prom night tonight. A lot of proms taking place. A lot of young drivers out there with, tuxes and girlfriends and lots of people who may have been doing some drinking that shouldn't be doing some drinking. So keep an eye out on the roads. I know I've got one of those out tonight. Looking forward to getting him back in. Let's go ahead and go to some open line calls, but mostly it looks like calls for you, Fred Burton. Again, the new book is out, Chasing Shadows, way cool. You can link up to Fred all the time through coasttocoastam.com. And a couple of people had a question about counterterrorism post the killer capture of Osama bin Laden, and Jack is in Michigan on Coast to Coast. Jack?
Yes, Ian.
Hi, you're talking to Fred. Go ahead.
Yes, Fred, you have a colleague who's retired from NSA, Major General William Fordham, author of Fixing Intelligence. There is also the scale Sybil Edmonds, who blew the lid on the State Department and some other agency of U.S. government, funding and equipping the Pakistan ISI, which was created by the CIA, with nuclear weapons. And this is further documented in the book Scholars for Terror by Robert LeBivier, John Cooley of the Christian Science Monitor, Unholy Wars, and Robert Dreyfus, The Devil's Game. And Ian, I learned all of this from your colleague, Stan Monteith, at Radio Liberty.
Okay, and there's a question in here, just so we can get to a question for Fred.
Well, indeed. The ultimate reality is, Fred, there's this strange, Linda Moltenhau, high strangeness about these CIA operatives suddenly transforming into boogeyman enemies of the state at a most convenient, appropriate time when there's a presidential debacle that's being played out. In this case, hundreds of lawsuits that have come against the president because he failed to resolve the matter of his a qualification via his medical, educational records, and, of course, that infamous birth record. So here we have another one of those.
Jack, scenarios. There's got to be a question here for the guest, though, right?
Okay.
Yeah.
Doesn't it smack him a little strange that history repeats itself in this way, that people like him are just being trotted out to confer credibility on what appears to me to be a just another fairy tale psyops?
All right, so you're accusing Fred of being a trotted out representative of the fairy tale. Just so I understand, I just wanted to, that's the question for Fred to respond to. Fred, are you part of a overall system here where you feel like you're being duped into believing something, which, as Jack says, this is all part of a presidential conspiracy?
Well, if so, I hope to get a portion of the $20 million reward for justice for bringing bin Laden to justice. No, I'm certainly not. I will say this, having lived in that world for many, many years, that you do have a good number of very dedicated folks that have struggled for years to try to find bin Laden and others just like him. You can't get caught up, at least I couldn't, in some of the policy-making decisions that take place. For example, the ISI, this is a very hostile intelligence agency that going into any kind of meeting with, you would always anticipate either being lied to or getting half-truths. Therefore, you have to unilaterally develop your information. And the challenge in reality is that you have personnel in country that you rely on the nation state to protect. So it's a very, very difficult environment to operate in, especially in Pakistan. But the agency.
What about the idea that we've been involved in through our CIA of giving Pakistan nuclear weapons? We should take some of the blame for that.
I have no firsthand knowledge of that. I know. Shortly after 9/11, we actually helped the Pakistanis protect some of their nuclear facilities and sites and to safeguard those out of fear that they would fall in the hands of al-Qaeda. Those kinds of actions, if they were taking place, they certainly were taking place at levels that I had no visibility in.
All right. Sam is in New York, east of the Rockies on Coast to Coast for Fred Burton, author of Chasing Shadows. Sam?
Good morning, gentlemen. Fred, I had a question for you. Where do you see America in 5 years from now after we caught the proverbial snake, you know, the head off of the snake?
Right.
I'll take my answer off air. Thank you, gentlemen.
It's a fair question. Where are we heading?
Well, thank you, Sam. I think that the challenge, again, is these franchise groups that continue to want to try to attack airplanes and public transportation and other high-value targets. This threat is not going to dissipate now that we've raided this single safe house. We have a tremendous amount of intelligence that will lead to, no doubt, the roll-up of other al-Qaeda safe houses, logistical nodes, couriers, but there's a tremendous number of franchise groups that are out there that are going to continue to try to attack us.
And so, as a counterterrorism expert, what is our best first line of defense moving forward?
I think that you're starting to see that with the disclosure of the rail threats, again, is public notifications of threats that you can use to help leverage all of our people in looking for. That is a very powerful tool to help you leverage your other intelligence activities going forward. And I think we'll start to see more kinds of these notifications as the CIA goes through this data dump taken from the safe house.
I got another question about too about that, but I'm not going to hold up Bruce, first time caller line in Santa Clara on Coast to Coast for Fred Burton, counterterrorism expert. Bruce.
Hello, sir. Besides being in Santa Clara, I'm also a security guard, and we are briefed on this information once in a great while. So, folks, we are keeping our eyes open, all of us. My question to you is simply this much. Now, to first premise, in supplying our troops in Afghanistan, the cheapest and easiest way is over land instead of by air. Thus, as far as I'm aware, the only way to go over land from the ocean to Afghanistan is through Pakistan. And isn't this also creating a slight political problem for our people?
Very much so. I think that that has been factored into the mix predominantly with Foggy Bottom, the State Department, and DOD, the Pentagon, with the reaction to bin Laden being found literally right under the nose of the ISI in order to help keep our troops supplied and resourced in Afghanistan. We need that route. And if we did not need that route, I think you would have seen by now a much more aggressive response by the U.S. On what did Pakistan know and who knew what. We've been monitoring that closely at Stratfor going forward since this unfolded, and I think you're going to see a lot of these kinds of tough questions being asked of the Pakistani government, the Pakistani ambassador to the United States, and so forth. And I wouldn't be surprised in the least to see the Pakistanis declare many U.S. embassy personnel persona non grata and literally give them the boot out of Pakistan. So our relations with Pakistan are critical to help keep our soldiers alive in Afghanistan.
You know, we'll take one more question for Fred, and then we'll do the rest open lines. And so we'll just make this quick, and thank you for giving us a little OT. Robin is in Norman, Oklahoma, on Coast to Coast for Fred. And Robin, you get the last question. Go ahead.
Yes, back in 1963, we saw JFK get shot, and that traumatized the American public. And I'm thinking by releasing the pictures of Osama, that could traumatize people in this country. And I think we need to have a little bit more sensitivity and maybe not celebrate this too much. And I don't think we should release those pictures because that could traumatize a lot of people in this country.
It's an interesting thought, or maybe even look at it in terms of how it might traumatize a young potential suicide bomber. I'm on the fence on those photos. I'll be honest with you, Robin. I appreciate your point of view. Where are you on that, Fred? I was leaning toward release them. I really was. I just thought, let's just get it out there. But what about you in releasing the death photos of Osama bin Laden?
I'll be blunt. I would hate to have to make that decision at the National Security Council, and because you really are in between a rock and a hard place. I think there's a large number of people around the world that would love to see them. I think there's also the potential for that to be turned around and come back and used as a psychological lever against us in the form of radicalizing more. It's much like hanging that picture in front of some of these mobs and having them use that as kerosene for the fire to make them storm a U.S. diplomatic facility.
Interesting.
That is the kind of decision that you really are stuck in. And that's the problem with this business in general, Ian, is at times there really are no good outcomes. There's no good decisions to make. And literally, a lot of your decisions are very, very bad.
As a counterterrorism expert, Fred Burton, question for you that we were debating around the old office the other day. Will you fly on September 11th, 2011, 10 years after 9/11, would you, if you had a choice, would you fly or not fly on that day?
I think they, at least inside the continental United States, the ability to pull off an attack on a commercial airplane on 9/11 is highly, highly remote.
Okay. Like the sound of that. Thank you, Fred. Appreciate that. And a lot of people who got to fly that day feel better. Again, his new book and more in your local bookstore, Chasing Shadows. Really good book. And appreciate you giving us a little extra time this hour on Coast to Coast. 100% renewable energy would devastate the oil industry, but maybe in a good way, believe that or not. We'll get to that coming up in just a few minutes. First, Beth, open lines on Coast to Coast. As promised, we get in a few. Hey, Beth.
Oh, hi. Actually, Ian, I had a couple questions for Fred, but
we're not doing that anymore. On my screen, it says here, Beth, for open line. So
that's what I told her. But what I'd like to say is, you know, everybody is going around, we're talking about the debt ceiling and we're talking about budget cuts and things like that. But what no one is saying is that, you know, we give Pakistan $1.4 billion with a B dollars a year. We give Afghanistan $7.8 billion with a B besides the cost of the war. And you cannot take this stuff off the table, this foreign aid, while we have 100,000 acres in Missouri being flooded to save towns. We have Alabama devastated. This is our money. Look what we could be doing with this money here at home. We could be fixing our infrastructure. We could be doing our roads.
We could be employing every single unemployed person.
Thank you, Ian.
We could be. And
absolutely.
So, you look at those, though, as a series of trade-offs. What we could be doing if we stopped funding everybody else, but in what would that give us? What's the downside to that? And, again, that's become sort of a Sophie's choice. Beth, appreciate the comment. We'll get one last here from Maureen, taking us up to the top of the hour. Open lines on Coast to Coast.
Hello.
Hi, Maureen. Yes.
Yes, I'm wondering about this Salah and Mubarak and Gaddafi. Why don't we go in and do what we did to old bin Laden?
Yeah, I think that's a question a lot of people are asking is how is it that Gaddafi is still with us if we got bin Laden? Couldn't tell you. I mean, I don't know whether, and we know they've tried, right? I mean, we know that Gaddafi's family members have been killed recently within the last, 10 days or so. So we know that there's been an effort to do that. I don't know. It sure makes sense in the sense that he's a sworn enemy and there's been attempts, this is a war. And so this sort of thing could happen in a war. And I don't know. It's interesting, though, and thank you, Marina. I was just watching a movie the other day, and it was about Gaddafi in one sense. Broadcast News. Remember Broadcast News, the movie with Holly Hunter and William Hurt and Joan Cusack and Albert Brooks, who's one of my all-time favorites? And the dramatic tension, other than the love story, in Broadcast News was all about a breakout of war against a Gaddafi, that there'd been a renegade pilot from Libya that had gotten involved in kind of a strafing run. And it was all focused on how Gaddafi was a threat to the United States. So wow, that movie's like 25 years old or whatever it is. That is still amazing that here Gaddafi still sits in that same place. And after he went through this huge rehabilitation and I'm so sorry and all that other stuff, that he remains in power. And I thought, we're right back to where we started. I mean, if you ever get a chance, go back and watch Broadcast News and think you could blink your eyes and we're still talking about the same guy in the same way here, 2011. Well, these topics won't get solved tonight on Coast to Coast, but glad we could at least start the conversation and ask yourself, too, if you could fly on 9/11, if you had to fly coming up at the 10th anniversary, will you? Is that a day you take off from flying or the day that you say, I'm not going to let the terrorists win? Is that a day when you just stay away from any kind of public transportation in this country or you boldly pay the $2 to take public transportation to work or whatever it is that you're doing that day? I don't know. All right. Maybe we'll know more as we get closer and more information comes out on this data dump that's happening from the computers they got from the compound of Osama bin Laden's in Abbottabad. So we'll leave it up to you then to think, how much would your life change if all of your energy were free, or if not free, 100% renewable? And how far away are we from having this be true in this country and getting off foreign oil completely? New research from Stanford University. We have the professor coming up next on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Bonnet.